Your local children's hospital is full of superheroes. Superhero patients. They wear gowns instead of capes and often fight evil on a microscopic level. And just like the doctors, nurses, and staff, you can help decimate illnesses and enemy foes for sick and injured children by gaming. Join Extra Life, a community of 50,000 gamers that play games and heal kids. Register at extra-life.org.
Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers. Lose the wizard hat. And ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another edition of It Costs How Much for Popcorn? Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad. Clever intro here. Welcome to the movie segment. We're brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today with free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also brought to you by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles that you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the posted paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices, and they just updated their rewards program where you can stack up to $20 in coupons toward any purchase. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Now, you might be able to hear it in my voice. I've had a bit of a cold this week. Now, for me, that's just an inconvenience. But for the thousands of families who find themselves utilizing the services of the Children's Miracle Network, things like a cold are not necessarily mild inconveniences, but can be real threats. And that's one of the reasons why we, the Geek Cave Podcast, have spent the last several years taking part in Extra Life Marathon, the 24-hour gaming marathon to raise money for Children's Miracle Network hospitals. This is the time that we ask for you to help support us doing that. Every donation made to our team goes directly to the network. We won't even see it. You can find the link to give on our Facebook page, on our website, geekcavepodcast.com. For those that need a bit more motivation, we've got some fabulous prices throughout the marathon, and Darren can give you a rundown on those right now.
Yep, we've got a bunch of stuff. We've got free t-shirts from Shirtosaurus, a digital movie code of Ghostbusters Afterlife, which was a pretty fun film. Mm-hmm. You can also get a free physical copy, of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge.
Physical. Yay. Physical.
It's from Limited Run Games. When they ship it to us, we will ship it to you. And of course, for a $250 donation, you will get to be a part of whichever Geek Cave podcast you want to be a part of. We will send you a video link. You will commune with us in real time. It will be pretty snappin'.
I dig it.
Yeah. All you have to do is go to geekcavepodcast.com, click on the Extra Life 2022 link, or click on the link in any of the videos and podcasts we've uploaded in the past couple months, and you'll be taken right there. Just donate to whichever host you like the best.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And that being the business and that being the stuff, I don't know. I've been kind of a homebody lately. Justin, did you do anything exciting?
Actually, yeah. With it being spooky season, I went to a raging early Halloween party. Please welcome the scariest musical force to crawl from the depths of the devil's nightmares, Sonny and Cher.
Pilot party! Pilot party!
Pilot party!
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Because the creature that lives under my bed likes variety. Staten Island, home to some of the most nefarious creatures that walk the earth. but none so fearsome as the vampire. This month's selection is What We Do in the Shadows, the series. First, we meet Guillermo, familiar to Nandor the Relentless. Why is he called the Relentless? Because he never relents.
Yep, that tracks.
Okay.
As Guillermo prepares the house for his master's awakening, we learn it's his 10th anniversary serving Nandor and hopes tonight will be the night he is made part of the coven. Nandor is but one of the four vampires dwelling in the house. We also meet Laszlo and Nadia, a married couple, who, after centuries together, they don't always seem eye to eye. Then there's Colin, an energy vampire who works in an office and drains humans of their energy by boring them or irritating them. Energy vampires are daywalkers.
I think I've worked with a couple of those.
He can also drain vampires. The other housemates don't like him much.
Can't imagine why.
On this auspicious night, a letter has arrived announcing a visit from Baron Afanas, an elder from the old country, to see how their takeover of the new world is going. Spoiler alert, it's going badly. Nadia is excited that the Baron's for the Baron's arrival because they once had a month-long fling, the most carnal love she'd ever experienced. Laszlo also tells us that he had a month-long fling with the Baron. Again, very carnal. With the Baron arriving the next night, preparations begin at once. Nandor goes to the store for glitter and cray paper, or creepy paper, as he calls it. Guillermo is in charge with finding virgins for the feast, so he heads to the park to convince some LARPers to come see his ancient sword collection. Meanwhile, Nadia spies on who she believes is the reincarnation of her former lover, Gregor, now called Jeff. In every life, Gregor ends up being decapitated by Nadia while making love to him.
Okay.
The Baron arrives and is dismayed by their progress in taking over the new world. So he says that tomorrow night, they will begin to conquer Staten Island and then the rest of the world. As the sun rises, the vampires retire. Nandor tells Guillermo that he has not forgotten his anniversary and to prepare himself for his gift. Instead of making him one with the night, Guillermo is presented with a glitter painting of him and Nandor. And in the picture, Guillermo is a vampire. Credits.
Right.
Much like The Office and Parks and Rec, it's a documentary-style show. And at one point when the Baron comes out of the coffin and is addressing everybody, he looks right at the camera and goes, "What's this?" And they just say, "It's a documentary. Don't worry about it." Oh, okay. And then back to...
Yeah.
The writing is brilliant. The acting is very well done. The visuals, though clearly low budget, fit the style of the show and are absolutely fantastic. You know, there's some, quote, gore, but it's also a TV show, so they don't have the budget for very realistic gore. The blood looks like blood, but it's also not, you know, they're not showing gaping wounds and very, and whatever. So it's, okay. It's a vampire story. Now for my predictions. As the show progresses, Baron Anophis and the other vampires attempt to take over the Western world, but fail time and time again. It turns out the energy vampires have conspired together to become the dominant vampiric race. They have planted one of their own in every office in the world, feeding almost endlessly. Not to mention that all economic teachers are also energy vampires. They've amassed so much power, they are able to vanquish their blood-sucking counterparts and take over the world themselves. And nobody is the wiser. I give it 4 shriveled and genital-less elder vampires out of 5. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, the Baron is naked, but he has no genitals, and that's what makes him such a great lover.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you for your sacrifice.
You're welcome.
So there are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some are given new life. Some are as dead as Marley's doornails.
This segment of the show asked you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? It was good then, the original's just as good now. Reboot it, the idea's sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it, what are these characters doing after a couple decades of growth and development? Or refuse it, Chad, a bucket somewhere needs kicked, and you should find it. The year is 1997. TGIF is on, and we're about to enjoy the heck out of some good old-fashioned family comedies. Open to a couple of teen males playing wiffle ball in the bedroom with whatever ball they can find at the time. Marty collapses onto the bed, asking, is there any food? I'm starving. And Steve, who owns the bedroom, says, well, there's some spaghetti in the fridge, but it's just too far to go. Luckily, there's some corn chips under the bed. Next to those corn chips is a burger, wrapped up in Halloween-themed paper. By the way, this is June.
Yes.
Steve dares Marty, take a bite. Eat it. Leading to Marty's death. It's all pretty sudden. And before we know it, Marty is in the hall of eternal judgment, looking up at the face of Shepherd Book, who is telling them that because Marty is so young, they're making him the guardian angel for his friend.
Oh, no.
Ron Glass, by the way, is not actually playing God in this show. He's God's cousin, Rod. But he got the job on his own merits. This is the opening 5 minutes to the TGIF sitcom Teen Angel.
Yep. There it is.
Part of the Supernatural set that graced TGIF in its waning years of the late 90s.
I remember this.
What follows over the run of the series are wacky supernatural hijinks of TGIF style, involving some fourth wall breaks, a lot of questionable decision making, plots that, had cell phones existed, would not have been written, and a multi-show crossover with Sabrina the Teenage Witch,
yeah,
and Boy Meets World, and You Wish.
Two of those I can see.
Each episode has a little lesson, but they have to learn the same lesson pretty much every week. Lasted a total of 17 total episodes. The mom was replaced. Well, the mom left the show halfway through the series. The mom was played by Marsha Brady from Brady Bunch.
Oh, okay. You know,
that actress. And because the teen angel could break the fourth wall, he just stops, references that she left, and then on with the show.
Okay.
It had a few notable guest stars, including Tim Curry as the voice of a talking frog, and Dee Snider of Twisted Sister fame as a rude rock star.
Why didn't you lead with Tim Curry?
Because I like, you know, I like leading up to a punchline. If I just said Tim Curry, then you would have stopped listening.
No, I would have listened more intently.
Is that what happened?
Yes. Well,
I can go back and say it all again.
No, it's fine.
But such as it is, a TGIF-style family comedy involving a dead teen who has been given angel wings and some supernatural heavenly powers, and Rod, God's cousin, played by Ron Glass, who is Shepherd Book, and it just kind of works. After all that, what say you? Review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
Refuse, flat out. No.
Yeah. This should be sent right back to whatever circle of hell it was from. I remember just a little bit of this show. Yeah. No, I mean,
I pulled up a picture for Darren to look at.
He looks like a douchebag, but I remember like a couple of episodes. Mostly I remember the crossovers because I watched, you know, the better shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when this character showed up and you ever bite your tongue?
Yeah.
Like inadvertently whenever you're, you know, eating, you just kind of, I got, you know, that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's the reaction this show gets out of me. It feels like I bit my tongue. So, no.
See, I always go back and I watch a few episodes just to remember.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. The thing is that I laughed
Man, did I laugh so hard in the first 5 minutes of this, but it wasn't because it was good. So, yeah, yeah, we'll sit and refuse it. So I realize that we're not doing news anymore, but in our regular life, D23 has showed up.
Oh, yeah.
Gone by.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's just a whole bunch of trailers.
On DKPodcast.com.
And I'm just going to focus on some of those for our trailer park roundup today.
Okay.
So like Secret Invasion showed up. It sure looks intense. And wow. I will say it's about time we got a Fury movie that didn't star David Hasselhoff. I'm on board. Hocus Pocus 2, I mean, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Bette Midler. I'm going to watch it. Also, I love the line, "Stop! I'm a good zombie!"
I just like in the poster, Kathy DeJimmy's sister is riding Roombas instead of a broom.
Yep.
That pleased me.
I enjoyed that. Willow? I mean, Willow's back. Willow's back. I'd be a little sad to be missing Mad Mardigan, the world's greatest sword fighter, but the world looks right, and I like a good, well-constructed, consistent world. Disenchanted. A sequel to Enchanted. Huh.
I liked the first Enchanted okay.
Neat.
I'm not sure where they're going with this.
I don't know either.
I assume down the dark road?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Amy Adams was so charming as Giselle. I'm not sure I like the idea of her slowly becoming the very thing that she hated.
Yeah.
It seems tropey.
It seems very tropey. Werewolf by Night?
Yes!
I think they just made a movie out of a campfire game. So, interesting. Interesting.
I should do him one day for a long box.
Elsa Bloodstone's a fun character.
Mm-hmm. The Little Mermaid live action looks pretty good too.
Looks now, fine.
I don't know what everyone's complaining about. I did have an issue with the trailer.
Okay.
But that's the ornamentation on some of the songs. And that is strictly out of what I enjoy and appreciate in Broadway style songs. I love her voice.
Yeah.
Clean.
Great.
Clear, bell-like.
Wonderful voice.
I'm just more impressed by the ability to sing a steady note than adding a whole bunch of extra stuff at the end. Yeah. Sing what's written.
Yeah.
Right? Sing what's written. I mean, somebody got paid to write that. Then again, it might be written that way, and it's just stylistically not my thing. But it looks good.
Agreed.
Looks good. And finally, the Santa Clauses. Tim Allen is retiring as Santa Claus.
I haven't heard of this one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, it's real.
I'm not sure where the bottom of the barrel is, but I think I'm starting to make it out.
See, there's something about, I don't know if it's makeup or if they did a little CGI stuff on his face.
Mm.
He doesn't look real.
It looks weird.
Yeah, because like, okay, I liked the first movie all right.
Mm-hmm.
Second movie, fine, whatever.
The Mrs. Claus.
Yeah. The third movie.
The Escape Clause.
Yeah. But like, we don't need any more of this. We don't. I know that there's people out there that love the idea of another Santa. And this is a series. This is a freaking series. And Peyton Manning is one of the potential Santa Clauses.
Manning, who looks like what would happen if humans evolved the need to not need helmets.
Yeah. But like, yeah, there's something about the visuals where like, I'm happy Bernard's back, but the fact that whenever he's in full Santa mode, it just doesn't look quite real. It looks almost like his face is made of Play-Doh.
It's a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
Somebody did something. And I'm not.
Maybe they'll fix it.
They'll fix it. I mean, She-Hulk had a similar problem where the CGI just didn't look quite right. And after that, once the show actually started, it was good. But
maybe they just needed something to put out.
They need a little bit more Christmas magic on that thing.
I don't know. I mean, I do like Christmas magic.
Yeah.
So last month we tried something a little bit off the wall.
Yeah.
We did a wrong answers only.
For Batgirl.
For Batgirl.
It was fun.
Why did they cancel that? Well, We've got kind of the run of movies for Marvel's Phase 4, 5, and 6, you know, coming up. And a surprise to me was seeing Fantastic Four on that list. Because so far, we've proven that a good Fantastic Four movie can't be made.
They've tried four times.
There's lots of them, and they're all bad. So, wrong answers only. What's going to sink this version of Fantastic Four and possibly the MCU? I'm going to start. They're going to kill Wong. And then I'm going to just burn it all down.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I don't think he's speaking metaphorically, folks. I think he's going to go to Marvel Studios and allegedly burn it all down.
Right. My guess is that in casting, they inadvertently just cast the main cast of the Drew Carey Show. So you've got Krista Miller as the Invisible Woman. You've got Kathy Kinney as Dr. Doom. You've got Diedrich Bader as Reed Richards, Ryan Stiles as the Human Torch, and Drew Carey as Thing. But they were expecting Drew Carey from the Drew Carey Show, not Drew Carey now.
Not from The Price is Right, Drew Carey.
And the CGI is just completely thrown off, and they just decide to scrap it all.
They're going to recast Ed Norton as the Hulk.
Let's do it again.
Because reasons.
Yeah.
But also not tell Mark Ruffalo, so he's just going to show up. And they have to, they're going to put, they've already done the, I think the CGI thing too, they've already done the CGI for Ruffalo, but they're going to have to put that on Ed Norton.
And see, the real fake answer here is that they're going to get into a big old copyright snafu with DC when they accidentally use the Green Lantern final boss instead of the Fantastic Four final boss Cloud. And
somebody grabbed the wrong SD card.
And
it turns out that DC's creation of the Doom Patrol did just slightly predate the Fantastic Four.
But yeah,
turns out there's a mediocre million that slightly predates it, and that's
Disney misread the script and actually ended up casting for the Civic Minded Five, which I would love that movie.
The Civic Minded Five.
Yeah, they were side characters in The Tick, and they all showed up to crime scenes in a minivan.
That's awesome.
I want that.
Oh, I'm on board.
I love The Tick.
I'm on board. Spoon! Okay. Oh, that was fun. I'll have another question next month. One that I put more than 5 minutes of thought into.
Oh, that was good, though.
All right. So, watched a couple movies. Pinocchio just came out. The live-action remake with animated bits came out on Disney Plus. Now, Pinocchio is one of my favorite Disney cartoon movies. It's the one that I watch when I don't feel good. It is comfort food for my soul.
Right.
So with that in mind, there are good parts of this movie, and there's quite a few of them. Tom Hanks is a really good Geppetto and brings the joy of the character, but also brings a little bit of the pathos of Geppetto that isn't brought out in the cartoon. That wasn't the point in the cartoon. Joseph Gordon-Levitt does an admirable job as Jiminy Cricket. You know, he really does do a good job there. The redesign for Monstro is better in just about every way, because Monstro is no longer a whale. He's a sea monster. Think more Sharktopus. But it's good. The cuckoo clocks in Geppetto's workshop is just a series of Easter eggs that should have you pausing about every second or two just to see what's there. The menacing parts are menacing. The story's efficiently told. There's not a lot of wasted scenes. So the question of, did I like it? I say, yeah, I did, but not as much as the original, which it's trying to be. A couple of new characters are added. They work really, really well. This is going to be one of those movies that whichever one you saw first, is probably the one you're going to lean toward. If you watch this one first, it's good. It is a well-constructed Disney movie. They know what they're doing when they make their movies like this. The cartoon's just a little bit, for me, a little bit better done. Overall, I'm giving it an A-. It's really good. Only thing that held it back really from a solid A is that the lessons that Pinocchio is supposed to learn come really, really easily. You know, lies and his nose grows, and then immediately, like within 10 seconds, you know, he apologizes and his nose shrinks. And it's like, that's not the way. You have to really fear the consequences of your actions.
Right.
In order for those consequences, you know, in order for those lessons to stick. And so you find out that, oh, just saying I'm sorry means that
it's fine.
You know, it's fine. That's not the lesson to learn there. You know. So don't give me any of the children's movie stuff that lessons should be easy to learn. Yeah, make the little wooden boy suffer for at least a couple minutes before you restore him to status quo. You know, worry. Overall, A-, not a bad film. Right. All right. Also, I watched Samaritan. I like a good superhero movie. I like street-level superhero movies and shows. Like Netflix's Daredevil, which is now on. Wonderful. I love that.
Daredevil's really good.
You know, and I'd been feeling a little bit burnt out by some of the Marvel stuff and its gigantic, great big themes and world-ending stuffs. And so, and honestly, if I have to hear another story about the dude playing the Flash, I just might have to coordinate a citywide scream to let the frustrations out.
That's fair.
I think we should do that anyway, but for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So, I watched Samaritan, the Sylvester Stallone grumpy old man superhero flick. A long time ago, there were twin brothers born with powers. Afraid of these boys, the town burned their house down, but did not kill the boys. They just killed the boys' parents. So one of them became a hero, Samaritan, dedicated to helping others. The other became his sworn enemy, Nemesis, because there was no line item for subtlety in the budget. Eventually, the two met for one last time at the power plant where it was assumed that both brothers died. So cut to the present time, and we follow Sam, a Samaritan fanboy who is convinced that Samaritan lives. And he seems to have this proven true in his neighbor Joe Smith when he... And then he tries to be all sidekicky, and the boy is a little bit annoying. And it's like, at some point, you just want Sylvester Stallone to act like Sylvester Stallone should act in that moment. Be like, leave me alone, kid.
Yeah.
Get away from here.
You get away.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what you do with a 12-year-old kid who just decided to start hanging around with a 70-year-old man all the time. He's like, leave me alone. This doesn't look good. Anyway, all this is going on in the city of Granite City, you know, and there's a whole bunch of gang relationship stuff and a guy who idolized Nemesis who wants to finish his mission because in his view, Nemesis was the people. Samaritan always seemed to protect the status quo, so therefore Nemesis was the one who would upset that because the status is not quo.
There it is.
Yeah. The twist is pretty clearly telegraphed, but I won't spoil it because it's a solid B action movie. And it's probably worth your time for an easy, if dark, superhero movie. So,
all right.
That's what I have by way of reviews and so forth. You guys have anything?
No.
Extra to add?
Ooh.
Yeah?
One more thing.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
All right, so, you know, sometimes I go down rabbit holes and get a little into the nuts and bolts of a movie.
Oh, yeah.
So, in Terminator 2, mm-hmm. which was a really good movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger earned $15 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he only spoke about 700 words of dialogue. So I did the math. Mm-mm. That's $21,429 per word. So, hasta la vista, baby. Cost the studio $85,716.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Oh.
Brilliant.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, in that case, with no further business, let's get into a random movie review. Kent?
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, the next random movie will be a good old-fashioned orgy. Probably. I say probably because I was supposed to watch Just Like Heaven this month, a romantic comedy with Mark Ruffalo and Reese Witherspoon. Unfortunately, Netflix took it down like a subtly dirty poster in a high school hallway. So I rolled the dice again, and instead I watched An Evening with Beverly Luff Lynn. And I cannot tell you how happy this has made me. Absurdist comedies are touch and go, most of the time. There's a real balance that has to be struck between absurdity and accessibility. And this is coming from a guy who watched The Lobster.
Yeah.
At its heart, an absurdist comedy is a bit like an inside joke. If you get it, they're awesome. They're hilarious. They're amazing. If you don't get it, it's confusing, and it leaves you feeling like you've missed something important. Like when your parents get real quiet when you walk into the kitchen. This is where the debate and the questions about Luff Lynn will invariably lead, because the question will be, is it accessible, inviting us into bizarre characters and their lives, or is it opaque and we're simply observing the non sequitur that is messy, complicated introverts? Now, for me, I loved it. I felt like the characters were messy without being overly complex, and the complete lack of explanation somehow just made it all better. The film takes place in some mishmash world of the 70s or the 80s, in a coffee shop with three men wearing suits and ties, and Lulu, played by Aubrey Plaza, also being there. Shane Danger, the manager, is super intense, and after a meeting with a dude from corporate is told that he must fire one of his employees, and so Shane, in his wisdom, fires his wife, Lulu. In the ensuing scenes, Lulu slips into some kind of depression. And by the way, most of this is happening with the most deadpan expressions you can imagine. The most wooden vocal inflections and the most intense 80s synth music since Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. One night, Lulu sees an advertisement for a live show at the town's hotel called An Evening with Beverly Luff Lynn for one magical night only. And Lulu recognizes Beverly and goes to her dresser drawer, where we are treated to some pictures of her with Beverly. The tensions in Lulu and Shane's relationship increase, you know, in part because she is hiding this from him, but also because Shane finds out that Lulu's brother keeps his life savings in a lockbox in his spice store, and it's a lot more money than Shane has. See, Shane's got a bit of a small man syndrome. So Shane, thinking very clearly, decides that the best idea is to steal the brother's cash box in the most wonderfully stupid way one can imagine. And we are treated to either some of the worst acting since Birdemic or some of the greatest acting since The Room. I don't know which. Oh. Afterwards, so Ajay, the brother, wants his money back, and he finds Colin. Colin makes the deal, says, I'll get your money back, you give me $200. This is the kind of thing I do. But Colin is bad at what he does, and he freezes up. And so Lulu kidnaps Colin, steals the money box, and takes him to the hotel, where the hotel they'll be hosting, Beverly Loughlin, where we get several more days worth of movie. We are introduced to Beverly Loughlin, a fairly large black man, and his hetero life mate, Rodney, and the bizarre relationships that are developed around all four of these characters, Beverly, Rodney, Lulu, and Colin. Lulu gets overly emotional whenever she sees Beverly. Beverly speaks only in grunts and noises. Colin spends most of the movie confused, and Rodney spends most of his time pining for Beverly and being snippy with Lulu. Eventually, we are treated to this magical night, and we find out that Beverly Loughlin is a musical review of whimsical Scottish folk songs, where this very large black man sings alto. It turns out in our story that Beverly was Lulu's first love, and she has been harboring feelings for him ever since he supposedly drowned. Beverly doesn't return her affections. Lulu, in her heartbreak, goes back to Colin, and the two of them dance to F.R. David's Words before declaring their love for one another. This movie's weird, man. And if you try to watch this by yourself, you will be robbed of all the true enjoyment this piece offers. This is the movie you watch after having played What the Dub and then riff tracks the game for a couple of hours and everyone is just burnt the out. Then you pop this puppy in and you find all the energy and all the imagination returned to your soul as you just go to town on it. This movie is a straight up be like me, but only in the context of watch it with friends.
Okay.
So, absolutely.
So I think you just said what we're doing tonight.
Possibly.
Oh boy.
I mean, it depends on how long D&D goes and
fair,
all that other stuff with no other business.
Oh.
Thank you, sponsor Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. Don't forget all y'all sweetest smelling listeners out there to find geeky news, etc. at geekcavepodcast.com. Find our link for Extra Life there. Join the Discord for the conversations. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, Good Pod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, including You Want Me to Watch What? Next week with special guests, and Week 3. Then head over to our YouTube channel to see Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics. And so for Kent Harris, our Magnus, for Darren Wright, our Merle, for Justin White, our Taco, I'm Chad Savage, our Clarg, the huggiest bear, and I'm just happy to be included. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.